I ducked out of the last chance, headed across town, and rang Maxwell's gong. And he showed up at the door with a bullseye lantern. Got an unidentified body at the last chance.
You would, wouldn't you?
I'll be sending people over in the morning to get the story on him.
Well, who's going to pay me?
You take your chances, Maxwell. Slamming that door in my face was his way of saying that he would arrive with a handcart at the saloon in 20 minutes. I made my way through the slumbering town to the sheriff's office. Bertel was there, feet up, half asleep, when I walked in. We have a body, no name, no one from here.
How'd that happen?
I found it walking the town. Where were you? Why weren't you out?
Outhouse. When a man has a bad bowel, he sits for hours in the outhouse. I spent half my life in an outhouse.
I'm going to bed. You get out there to Last Chance and help Maxwell. I'll put what I know into the log. He nodded and headed into the deep, dark night. I got a pencil ready and did my best to get them words down, one letter at a time, like I learnt in sixth grade. Unknown man killed. I woke up the next morning sick as a puking cat. I didn't know what time it was. The sun tossed light into Bell's boarding house. I was fevered. I don't know how I got so sick. But what did it matter? I'd rubbed shoulders with a lot of people at the opera house, and maybe the sickness rubbed off on me. I didn't want to get up, but there was stuff to do. I had some crimes to solve, including the murder of someone unknown. I started to get up and fell back. Getting up was a bad idea. I didn't know what to do. I hadn't been drinking and wasn't hungover. Belle must have heard me groaning, because she let herself into my room.
You look like a throat slit hog.
Feel worse than that.
You ain't going to the office, are you?
I couldn't get past the first block. Belle, I need you to go tell him I'm sick.
Well, I'll tell him, but first you're going to get back in your bunk and I'll get some tea up here.
My ma used to say tea cures anything. All you got to do is down it. Send me some red eye. But Belle left me and came back a few minutes later and got some tea into me. I don't ever drink tea. It's the awfulest stuff, and I think some mad genius invented it to torment the world.
I'll get Doc Harrison.
No, don't. I can't afford it. And he'll yank my tonsils out without asking.
I'll get him anyway. And I'll stop at your office and tell them that you're dying and need last rites.
You're real kind, Belle. Tell Rusty and DeGraff to find out who the body is. And start with that man rooming with Mrs. Gildersleeve, who owns the show. Or just send one of my men over here, and I'll tell him.
Whatever.
Belle vanished and reappeared with a white enameled thunder mug.
You lose anything from any north or south exit in your carcass, you lose it in here. If you lose it on the floor, it'll drip through the planks and wreck my parlor. I'm expecting guests.
Got you, Belle. I eased back in my bunk. The room was probably going to be my coffin. The ceiling would be the last thing I'd ever see. I might croak in the dark and never see sunlight again. Maybe croaking wouldn't be such a bad idea the way I felt. The room rotated around and around and then heaved like the deck of a ship in a gale. I lay there, and then Rusty walked in without even knocking.
Hey, how you doing?
I might croak.
Oh, that's fine. The office runs better without you. Don't get well.
I'll try not to.
We all went to have a look at the corpse over at Maxwell's. He sure is a stranger.
Yeah. No one in Upward's joint ever saw him. You get a hold of that vaudeville lady?
Yeah, we got her into Maxwell's just as he was bleeding the corpse into the bucket. She said it ain't anyone with the show.
What about her consort? The one she showed up with?
Him? He came with her. That's her fixer, Harry Frost. He does the fixing for the show.
What the hell is fixing?
Well, every show's got a fixer. He's the one who makes things work. If someone quits, he pounds the hell out of the quitter or finds a replacement. If a freight company overcharges, he has it out with the company. If they lose costumes in a rainstorm, he fixes up the show with new ones. If the politicians in the next town want some bucks or free tickets or a concession to sell beer in the lobby, he gives them something. You get it?
I wish he'd fix my gut.
I don't think the deceased had anything to do with the show. He looks like a businessman, pretty well dressed.
Rusty, you get our Benz to take some pictures of him. Prop him up, get the image, and have our Benz make two prints. We need to get someone to identify him.
Maxwell wants money.
My ma always told me never walk into a funeral parlor. Rusty, when I cash in, which should be in 10 minutes or so, you put me in a wagon and take me to the supervisors and lay me across their big table in there and tell them to pay.
They're too cheap, Cotton.
Ain't that the truth?
Whew! You need a good scrub. Should I get bail?
Stop torturing me, Rusty.
You should never took your boots off. How can you stand your own feet?
My ma used to say that smelly feet are better than any other smells.
I'm out of here.
Rusty left, and I settled back to get some rest. But then Doc Harrison busted in unannounced. He was unlikable on sight, with them little eyeglasses with round lenses and shark teeth wounding his dusty lips.
Bell sent me.
There's nothing wrong with me. He sat on the edge of my bed, poking me with a finger and making me mad. And I won't pay you since I didn't ask for you. He was manipulating my jaw, trying to find swelling in there, and listening to my heart and all that stuff. Finally, he quit mauling me.
You're right. There's nothing wrong with you.
I told you so.
It's the vapors.
Well, what's that?
The vapors are the imitation of disease. The county supervisors are firing you, so you get the vapors.
Tell that to my chamber pot.
The vapors are induced by stress. They are most common among women, but an occasional womanish male gets them.
I haven't got any vapors.
That's $3. I usually charge $2, but you're special.
Send it to the county supervisors. I didn't ask you to come.
Bill thought you were gold bricking. She thought you should be out on the street keeping us safe. You discovered a body last night, and now you have the vapors.
Doc, I'm going to sleep.
You should get out of bed and stop cheating the taxpayers.
He stuffed his shiny instruments into his black Gladstone and eased out the door. He was a pretty good doc, except when he wanted to be. He made me mad. I wondered what the next insult walking through my door would be, when all of a sudden the bottom of my stomach dropped out and whatever was left in there came bubbling up. I pushed myself up out of my deathbed and uncovered the chamber pot, and deposited my innards into it just in time. That was just about as satisfying as a chamber pot session can be, and I was congratulating myself when Mrs. Gildersleeve and Harry Frost walked in.
What do you want?
Death threats.
Not a bad idea.
He dug into his suit coat and pulled out several papers and handed them to me. I don't read real good, but I got the gist of them. They were saying to get out of town before sundown, or the Gildersleeve Variety Company would soon be short-handed.
What are you going to do about it?
Where'd these come from?
They got pushed under the door of our hotel room. Ralston found one pushed under the door of the opera house, and another ended up with the ladies of our cast.
Who doesn't want you here?
Ralston thinks the banker and his friends are behind it.
Sanders? Yeah, that's possible. He wanted me to arrest your whole show even before it opened.
I looked at the notes. They were printed in block letters even I could read, not that script stuff.
Maybe you should write one of your own and stick it under the bank door. You don't need the law for this.
Sheriff, these are death threats. Get out or end up shorthanded.
This is just some doubtful prank or other.
You should get out of bed and help us. Mr. Ralston said you'd help us, and what have we got? A sheriff stuck with his head in a pot.
I'm through with the pot. I'll go talk to Sanders. If he did it, I'll deal with him.
God almighty, you sprung a leak.
Frost steered Mrs. Gildersleeve through my door and into the hall while I recovered myself. I didn't much feel like getting up and confronting Sanders, but if my vapors allowed it, I'd go over there. I finally got dressed and sat down to study them death notices they handed me. They was all hand-printed with a pencil. Someone sure didn't like the Variety Company. They were all signed in small type at the bottom, Doubtful Mothers for Modesty. Well, there were two or three of those in town, probably all friends of Mrs. Sanders.
Whoa.
I stood and got dizzy. If I had the vapors, they sure were plenty powerful vapors. Maybe I'd start with Hubert Sanders himself, since he was the one who wanted me to shut down the show even before it arrived. Or maybe Ralston first. I wanted to get the story. When did those death threats show up? And who did he think was doing it? I staggered into the daylight, en route to the opera house, hoping I'd survive the vapors, with the death threats in hand. Once I got out in the sunlight and the warmth of a summer's day, I felt worse. Them vapors sure had me looser than a calf with scours. I hoped Doc Harrison would catch the vapors himself. Serve him right. I stood in front of Bell's, deciding whether I could walk or not. I decided I couldn't, but had to, so I began bobbing and weaving my way to the sheriff's office, intending to startle my lazy deputies. Actually, it was good to get some sweet air in my lungs. I wobbled down Main Street and finally climbed the steps and into the office, where Rusty and Bertel had their feet on the desks. They eased their boots off the county furniture as I entered.
You look like you're seeing a ghost.
Well, you're supposed to be dead.
My ma always said a gossip dies 1,000 times before his death.
We haven't got anywhere with the murder. We were just thinking what to try next.
Well, what have you done about it?
Talk to saloon men.
I pulled the death notices from my pocket and handed them to the deputies.
You fellas got any ideas about these? They got put under the doors of the Variety Company.
Bertel eyed his upside down and handed it to Rusty.
My eyes are no good.
It just says for them to get out of town or end up shorthanded.
That's supposed to be a death threat? Maybe it's a threat to chop off some hands.
You're pretty pale.
It's the vapors.
You better go back to Bales.
I got a murder to solve and death threats, and all you do is sit around here.
The supervisors were here looking for you. I think they were planning to fire you for being sick.
Well, if I'm fired, I'm still gonna solve this murder if I can.
I abandoned them and wandered toward the opera house. I had one more card to play. I found the door unlocked and Cyrus Ralston in his cubbyhole backstage, waxing his mustache. He had a small revolver on his desk and was ready to grab it when I wobbled in.
Oh, it's you, Sheriff. Doc Harrison says you have the vapors.
I'm fit as a fiddle. Ralston, we got an unidentified male over at Maxwell's funeral home. He's not local. He's too well dressed. And no one in Doubtful dresses like that. None of the barkeeps had ever seen him. Maybe he's with the show. I'm wondering if you'd mind having a look.
I enjoy bodies.
Ralston tucked the revolver into the breast pocket of his black worsted suit, and we headed out the door, walking down to Maxwell's a block away.
Your show doing well?
Sold out every night, Sheriff.
That can does it.
Well, that's what's causing the death threats.
How long will they be here?
Tomorrow night's the last show. Then they're off to Casper. I tell them there's nothing good in Casper, and they'll have to play in a root cellar or a church basement. Well, they'll give it a try.
We steered into Maxwell's parlor. It was just a tiny place, on the theory that no one in Doubtful had any friends or family or money, but it was the only burial palace in town. It started as a log store with a false front, but now looked like a cottage, with green shutters on fake windows and whitewash covering all the bad carpentry. Horatio Maxwell answered the door chime.
Up half the night squeezing blood from that turnip.
Without my asking or nothing, he led us through a couple of parlors to a dark room in back, where the unknown lay on a zinc tabletop.
Nothing in his pockets.
That you'd admit to.
No gold teeth.
Except what's in your pocket.
Meanwhile, Ralston studied the ghostly white body, which wore under drawers and no more.
Pinky Pearl. Oh, no.
You know him?
Advanced man for the next show. I spent yesterday afternoon with Pinky. Oh, no, this is terrible.
Who is this fella?
He's with the next show, the Grand Luxembourg Follies, doing advance.
What's that?
He works ahead, making sure the show has what it needs when it gets here. If a magician needs a live chicken to pull out of the hat, the advanced man gets the chicken.
Now there's some job for you.
Advanced men book rooms, book meals, book transportation, make deals with theater owners like me, fill special needs.
What did he want yesterday?
Actually, he wanted to know whether his company would be safe.
Safe?
The Follies are a little daring.
Well, The less safe, the better.
Well, we gotta notify next of kin.
The show will know. It's leaving Cheyenne in the morning. Be here the following eve.
We got a killer around here. You got any clues, Ralston?
The deceased is a showman, and so am I. And that means I'm staying armed.
Who runs the Grand Luxembourg Follies?
The Camel Brothers Circuit.
What's that?
There's organizing outfits. Some in New York, some in Chicago. They create circuits and put shows on them and hire or own shows themselves. My theater's a Camel Brothers house.
Roll him over, Horatio. The Undertaker flipped the carcass with a practiced hand. The stab wound was low, below the rib cage. First stabbing I've dealt with. Cowboys, teamsters, and vagrant males all use six guns.
I've seen a few. This killer knew enough to thrust upward from a low point.
A professional, then?
We've an experienced killer loose and doubtful. Who'll he strike next? Now, Sheriff, about the fee, my little recompense.
Wait for the Grand Luxembourg Follies. They'll take care of him, all right?
But it would be helpful if the county paid from its poor fund. You never know about show people. Beg your pardon, Mr. Ralston.
Bury Pinky Pearl and send me the bill. And give him a good send-off. I'll tell his company when they roll in. Oh, and Maxwell. Get a man of the cloth, too, and some flowers if there are any, and something better than a pine box. And a marker on the grave.
Horatio Maxwell scribbled away.
Ah, yes, a marker. Hey, we have $1,000 granite obelisk, plus shipping from Vermont. Shall I sign you up? The incised legend would be extra, of course. We'd have to bring in an artisan from Denver. So far, you're at $2,749.
Pour a rectangle of cement and put his name in it, and I'll pay $20.
That's 79 for the concrete and 40 for the name in it, Mr. Ralston.
Cancel that. Some of us will pick up the body in an hour.
And do what?
Bury Pinky Pearl.
I'll get the deputies to pitch in. We got a couple of spades.
But you can't. It's not legal.
Ralston and I'll pick up Pearl in 1 hour. Have him ready.
I won't let him go until I'm reimbursed.
That killer stabbed the wrong man.
I'll go rent a dray, Sheriff, while you get the deputies.
I didn't expect to do much shoveling, not the way I felt. But I'd fetch two deputies with strong backs. Only trouble was, they weren't in there. They'd been out to lunch for 3 or 4 hours. I did collect the spades, however. By the time I got back to Maxwell's, Ralston had one of Turk's drays ready, and he also had four of the roustabouts bunking in Turk's hayloft. We marched into Maxwell's and found him back there with Pearl, who was wrapped in a winding sheet.
Where's a coffin?
I can't release the deceased or supply goods or services without reimbursement.
Well, bill the county. We eased Pearl into a box from a stack of boxes, and then the roustabouts carried him out to the dray, while Maxwell caterwauled behind us.
I'm going to talk to the county supervisors about you.
Well, that's fine. The line's only a block long now. The roustabouts laid Pearl's box on the dray and led the horse toward the Doubtful Cemetery, which was just west of town. We were a sorry bunch, in sorry clothes, except for Ralston, who always wore something that suited his station in life. We pulled in there, just the six of us in that pine box, and we picked a good spot next to Mrs. Stokes, the lawyer's luckless lady. The roustabouts took over, carving the rectangle into earth, prying loose a few rocks, and finally climbing out. With a nod from Ralston, they eased Pinky Pearl into the hard soil of Doubtful, and then shoveled that tan clay back into the hole until there was only a mound. We stood there in the summer afternoon.
I'll say some words. Well, some people don't much care for show people. But Pinky Pearl was as fine a man as I've ever met. His handshake was his bond, like all of us in this business. We try to brighten people's lives, bring them the things that they would never see in their own worlds. We bring dreams to people. We bring them smiles and tears and beauty. We remind them that life is something to enjoy, no matter how hard it may be. Pinkie Pearl was one of us. May he rest in peace. May God welcome him as one who spread happiness across the land and brought beauty to those who had never known beauty.
Ralston looked like he was going to say more, but then subsided and stood with head bowed, perhaps offering his own silent prayer. One of those roustabouts had found a wild aster, and now he placed it gently in the yellow clay, where it would serve as an honor and a blessing and a remembrance. We took the horse and dray back to Turk's, and I checked in at the sheriff's office and found no one around, and my deputies out to lunch until supper. I was pretty worn out and far from well, so I settled in the swivel chair and dozed. There needed to be someone watching over Doubtful. By the next morning, I was finally feeling better. After getting dressed, I made my way down Main to the sheriff's palace, wondering how many crimes had been committed in the night and how many would be blamed on my negligence. When I got in there, Rusty looked at me and nodded toward the jail. Sure enough, a local drunk named Artie was snoozing on a bunk in a cell. Drunk and disorderly?
No, Ike Berg dragged him in late last night and we booked him in for burglary.
Ike Berg? He's got no legal right. This ain't his county.
Well, he did it. He booked Artie.
He's playing lawman around here.
He wants your job, and he's getting in thick with the supervisors, so he decided to show off a little.
Read me Ike's log. I could never get much out of that curvy handwriting with all them letters tied together like they were bent out of shape, so I just let Rusty figure it out.
Suspect was found rifling a cash box in Rosie's House of Heaven at about midnight June 11th and had put 71 purloined dollars in his pants pockets while Rosie was entertaining a customer in another room. Rosie reported she had been robbed of her life savings and retirement funds while entertaining a client and identified Artie as the thief. Suspect said he had gotten the money from swamping saloons and picking up change dropped in the sawdust. But most of the greenbacks were $2 and $1 greenbacks, along with a 20. Suspect arrested and booked. Ike Berg, sheriff.
Ike should have got a deputy.
DeGraff was Rosie's customer just then, so he was busy.
Guess I'd better find Iceberg.
Oh, Cotton, the supervisors are looking for you.
Tell them I'm here.
I think they're worried about this crime wave.
I think they want to fire me.
Well, I didn't want to say it.
I picked up the county's sawed-off scatter gun and headed into the June sunlight. I could see that Doubtful was having a peaceable morning. Ralston had changed his marquee to read, Final Night, the Gildersleeve Company. I headed for the beanery, which is where I would likely find Sheriff Byrd. I meant to have a word or two with him, and maybe discuss a few rules in my county. Sure enough, a skinny man in black occupied a corner seat and was nursing a Java.
You owe me lunch, Pickens. Somebody had to stop the crime wave around here, as long as the local peace officers couldn't manage it, so I was elected. I'll have steak and beans.
I see you nabbed our local saloon swamper, Artie.
Sure did, with a pile of stolen greenbacks in his britches.
I hear you hauled him off and put him in my jail and booked him.
I did. Your deputy DeGraff was nowhere in sight. In fact, he wasn't even dressed for business.
I hear that Artie thought you were a lawman.
It sort of surprised him, Pickens. He was used to getting away with murder.
And your star persuaded him? Even if it came from the wrong county?
A peace officer is a peace officer, Pickens. I'll nip anyone anytime, especially when the locals don't manage it.
You after my job, are you, Iceberg?
I already have it. They just haven't told you yet. They want this crime wave stopped, and you're not doing it.
What are they going to pay you?
75. I came down a little when they threw in a few perks.
What are you earning now?
50.
And why aren't you in your own county?
Pickens, you just don't get it. I got no crime in my county. I stamped it out. And I've got two deputies watching the store while I'm here. No one's even seen a burglary since I took over down there. Medicine Bow County's the cleanest place in the country. I got the best enforcement in Wyoming. The last arrest was 6 months ago when I caught a little girl playing hopscotch in the middle of the street. She spent 3 days behind bars before I cut her loose. So, naturally, your supervisors are eager to have me and send you packing.
Well, my ma always used to say, when someone's busting the law, arrest him. So put your paws up, Iceberg.
I moved the barrel of my scatter gun straight into his midsection. He looked plumb flummoxed. You heard me.
For what?
Impersonating a peace officer. You ain't sworn in this county, and you're pretending you are. Now get up slow and easy, and we're gonna walk real careful toward the jail.
Forget it, Pickens. This is a joke.
You see these 12-gauge barrels aiming at your ribs? Back in there are two loads of double-aught buckshot, and if I pull these here triggers, I'll separate the Ike from the Berg real permanent. It dawned on him that I meant it. He was staring real hard at my trigger finger, so I wiggled it a few times for show. There sure was a bunch of doubtful folks watching this in the beanery and enjoying every minute. Two men with stars, and one holding a scatter gun on the other. The customers would be gossiping about this one for weeks. Iceberg got real smirky.
Yeah, my 15 minutes in the sun.
But he got up slow and easy and kept his hand away from that piece he had strapped to his hip because he knew I'd do what I'd said. He eased out the door. He was too smart to try any tricks, so I let him walk ahead of me toward my office while more of Doubtful's finest citizens watched. Iceberg started to enjoy himself. He waved at the gawkers and nodded and bowed and saluted. I didn't care what he did, long as his hands didn't get anywhere near that peacemaker he was carrying. I was sort of enjoying it myself, and waved a time or two at the spectators. But finally, we climbed them steps and stepped in, and I was ready for some trick. Rusty got to one side real quick, and eased around and opened the jail door, and then a cell door, and then stood real wide at the ready. All right, Bird, real slow. Unbuckle that gun belt, and let it down real slow. And remember, I don't even have to aim to turn you into fish food. He obeyed, still real smirky, and even stepped away from the weapon on the floor and into his cell, which Rusty slammed shut. I headed for the log and wrote the information, getting it down in nice clean block letters. Arrested Sheriff Ike Berg for impersonating a peace officer and using armed force to arrest a citizen of Puma County.
Can you spell my name, Pickens?
Good enough. The judge and the county attorney can read it.
When do I post bail?
Oh, in a few weeks. I tell you what, you can leave here anytime you want, so long as you get your kit at the hotel and get out of my county just as fast as you can manage it. You'll get out and stay out. You ain't coming back. You ain't gonna work here, even if I get fired. If the supervisors want you, you'll say no. You think about that.
Nothing to think about. I'm your guest for a little bit. After that, maybe you'll be my guest here. I expect the supervisor will swear me in any time now. I never forget anything. I will not forget that I came here to help you, that I put a dent in your crime wave, and that you treat me as if I'm the criminal instead of that reprobate there.
Over in the next cell, Artie stared at all of us.
He's not a copper.
Not here. He's the sheriff over in Medicine Bow.
I should have shot him. It would have only been a misdemeanor.
You would have done Puma County a favor.
If I wasn't nabbed by a legal peace officer, then you got to let me go.
When you see the judge, tell him. Maybe you're right. The judge listens to jailhouse lawyers. I'm going out. You tell DeGraff when he comes in. On county time, his pants stay on. Dinner hour, he can wear nothing at all. That's fine with me. But I expect him to be on the job instead of on Rosie during work time.
I'll tell him.
Tell him we got a crime wave. I stepped into the afternoon and headed across the village square to the Puma County Courthouse. I found Reggie Thimble in the county assessor's office, jacking up the taxes.
Ah, you feeling better?
I might.
We've been looking for you, Pickens.
I don't fire easily. I just tossed Ike Berg in my jail.
Berg? Jail?
He's not a peace officer here. He ain't sworn here. His office runs to the boundary of Medicine Bow County. But he's wearing a star and arresting people, and so I'm charging him.
But we're gonna swear him in as soon as we get rid of you. In fact, we unanimously voted to hire another sheriff. We have a crime wave in Doubtful, and so far you haven't even slowed it down. Sorry, Pickens. You can take that star off your chest right now, and that will end it.
My ma always said never argue with a man with a gun. Now you're gonna give me 30 days' notice. If I don't bust this here crime wave 1 month from now, I'll hand you this star.
But we fired you.
30 days notice, Thimble. And Iceberg is going to enjoy my hospitality the whole time. If I don't restore public safety by then, I'll cut him loose and you can pin this here star on him and ship his star back to his county. And if you mess with me before the 30 days are up, I'll toss you and Ziggy Camp and George Waller in there too. And you can play poker with jailhouse cards all day every day with Iceberg, and he'll clean you out of everything you own.
Pickens, you imbecile!
Soon as I got my weary carcass back to my office, I discovered Delphinium Sanders intimidating Rusty. She was the banker's wife, and she could cow anyone or anything. She was built along the lines of a perfect cylinder, and if there was anything female in there, she took pains to hide it. Her brown skirts touched the ground, and the rest of her, from neck to wrists, was swathed in brown also. She had a brown parasol, folded up now, she used to jab at anything that slowed her progress through town. She'd been known to wound dogs with it and kill cats. Rusty sat sort of low in the swivel chair and seemed to get lower and lower as she berated him. But when I walked in there, she turned on me.
You've been fired. What are you doing here?
I've given myself a 30-day notice.
How can you do that? We told the supervisors to fire you.
Well, I did it.
Where's Sheriff Berg?
He's my guest back there.
How dare you put him in there? He's the new sheriff.
Well, he's there.
Let him out immediately.
Well, he can leave any time he wants, ma'am.
Give me the keys.
My ma used to say, never lock a woman out.
Why are you keeping him back there?
For impersonating a peace officer. He got busy arresting a feller and flashing his badge, even though he ain't sworn here.
What difference does that make?
Well, ma'am, if you was to start arresting people, they might object.
Well, I just might. It's come to that. There's no enforcement of the law and the Constitution in Pima County, and I intend to take matters into my own hands.
Then I'll toss you in there too, ma'am.
If he can leave when he wants, why is he there?
Well, the deal is, if I let him out, he goes back to Medicine Bow County and gets his skinny butt out of here.
You're talking to a lady, young man.
Who would have thought it?
Why haven't you shut down that immoral opera house?
You want to show me a law says I should?
There's a higher law, Pickens, that tells us how to behave. And that is why theaters and playing cards and whiskey and dancing are illegal in the larger scheme of things. That is why I've organized the Doubtful Watch and Ward Society, and why we'll be picketing the Opera House tonight, to drive this shameful public display of licentiousness out of the city.
License what? I don't cotton to them fat words, ma'am, but I'll license whatever needs licensing.
Oh, forget it. I'll get the supervisors over here and my husband, and we'll have this distasteful business done with in 5 minutes. We're going to clean up this town for good. It's going to be so clean that it squeaks. We're going to shut down every saloon and every disorderly house and every theater. We're going to drive out aliens and non-citizens. And you're at the top of our list, Cotton Pickens.
I wish I never had that name hung on me by my ma and pa, ma'am. It sure is embarrassing. I'm inclined toward Thaddeus myself. Do you figure that'd be a better handle than what I got stuck with?
You're an imbecile.
She huffed out the door. Rusty sure was grinning like hell, but I didn't get mad at him. Go lime the privy. And while you're at it, empty Ike Berg's piss pot. And after that, lime the courthouse privy. Rusty, he sure was smirky. I thought maybe I'd fire him if he didn't shape up. I picked up a billy club and headed for the opera house. The marquee said this was the final night for the Gildersleeve Company. Next, the Grand Luxembourg Follies with a cast of 20 beauties. I sure was ready for some beauties and planned to watch every show. I liked carrying the billy club. I had quit wearing my six gun long ago because it wasn't needed and was heavy. Anyone who thinks it's fun to haul around all that weight is nuts. I found the opera house door was open, so I went in there looking for Ralston. It sure was dark in that cavern without them footlights lit, but there was some light coming from that cubbyhole of an office, and I found him in there. Last night, huh?
For the Gildersleeve Company. They'll wagon over to the rails tonight after the show.
You're gonna have some company tonight. Banker's wife, Delphinium, she's got some ladies together in a watch and ward society, and they're gonna make a fuss at your doors.
Good. Get the word out.
Good?
You bet. That should fill the house. I was thinking the gate was all played out for this show, and we'd be lucky to have a few dozen, but this'll crank it up.
But they're a mean bunch, Ralston. I sure wouldn't want Delphinium Sanders for my ma. My ma always said, choose your ma carefully.
The longer I know you, the more I like your ma.
There'll be a few ornery maws out there tonight.
I hope they'll beat up a customer or two. Oh, that'd be even better. Put the Opera House on the map.
You sure you don't mind? I'd pinch all them ladies if they start disturbing the peace.
You don't understand show business, Sheriff.
I don't understand sheriffing either.
Do me a favor and tell all the barkeeps that these ladies will picket tonight.
Hey, Ralston, I'm a peace officer, not a war officer.
That's my boy.
Well, sure enough, at about 6:30, them watching ward people showed up with signs they painted on pasteboard. There was a bunch, all right. Delphinium Sanders was the top dog, organizing them people in a sort of line around the box office and the front doors of the Opera House, so it'd be real uncomfortable to slide between them and into the theater. There was the wives of some of the businessmen in town, like Mrs. Sawbridge, whose husband ran a dry goods store, and Mrs. Vermont, whose husband sold men's clothing, like long johns and flannel shirts. And there was Mrs. Bullock, whose man was a cobbler and sold boots and shoes and fixed old ones. And there was that old Mrs. Perkins, whose husband ran the feed store and sold horse tack. And there were a few men, too. The blacksmith, Mickey Mann, was right in there with a sign he was waving. And the feller who ran the hardware and sold lime for privies and garden fertilizer. I watched them collect there and studied on their signs some, but it wasn't easy for me to read all them words. One said, the wages of sin is death, or something like that. And another said, drive sin from doubtful. And another said, sweep evil from Puma County. And another said, walk in and enter Hades. Mickey Mann's 17-year-old daughter, Melodia, had her own sign. Pure maiden demands a pure town. Someone had painted up them signs pretty fine. Big black letters so everyone could read them easy. And none of that script where all the letters bleed into the others and no one can make sense of it all. I got to thinking that nearly everyone there was connected one way or other to a local business, and all them people wanted the cowboys coming in to see the show to buy union suits and boots and haircuts and not spend their money in Ralston's place. And it made all them people feel real bad to think that the Gildersleeve show would soon leave town with a mess of money gotten in doubtful in its cash box. That sure was interesting. Maybe all these folks were less interested in morality than in keeping their cash in town and keeping shows from latching onto the ranch and mine payrolls. And that was plenty interesting, too. So I stood there with my billy club, keeping the peace. Those sign carriers could stand there, but if they tried to block people from going in or coming out, I'd step in. I figured Ralston's patrons would have a bad enough time just sliding through them merchants and their wives, and I'd not let it go further than that. The Gildersleeve show people wandered by, real pretty gals, and gawked at the crowd, but then they went down the alley and entered the stage door. No one molested them, so I just kept an eye on things. The comic and the magician showed up, eyed the crowd, whistled at Melodia, and tipped their top hats to the picketers, and meandered down the alley. This here was real entertaining.
Arrest them for lewd behavior.
Arrest who?
Those men who whistled.
They were just appreciating a local girl, ma'am.
Appreciating? That's a sinister insinuation, Sheriff. They were virtually disrobing the girl with their gaze, demeaning her, reducing her to their own animal lust.
Well, that's kind of nice, ma'am. Man, the look she gave me had a hangman's noose in it. I thought maybe she'd whack me, and I'd have a good reason to haul her off to my friendly jail. She whirled away, leaving me staring at her rigid back. I saw Hubert Sanders standing back away, watching all this. He looked like he was the field marshal for this whole watch and ward business. Pretty quick, customers began arriving, and mostly just grinned, bought their tickets from Ralston himself in the box office, and entered the theater. They didn't have any trouble slipping between all them sign waivers. They were mostly cowboys off the neighboring ranches and had probably seen the show 2-3 times. Cowboys don't see women very much, and here were a mess of pretty ones with a little leg showing too. The only real interesting thing was lawyer and the second Mrs. Stokes, who studied the picketers, decided to go in, bought tickets, and entered,
even as Delphinium began a chant.
Shame, shame, shame. Shame, shame, shame.
Shame, shame, shame.
Shame, shame, shame.
Then came Lemuel Clegg, a logger out of town. He studied them signs and approached Delphinium Sanders.
How come you ain't picketing the cat houses? Ow!
She whacked him, and I stepped in between them and pushed her back with my billy club.
Arrest him!
You're the one hit him. He didn't hit you.
He insulted me.
Well, how'd he do that, ma'am?
You wouldn't understand.
Well, guess not, ma'am. You hit anyone again, and I'll lock you up for the night. Clegg bought himself a cheap balcony seat and winked at me.
He winked at you?
Pretty awful, ain't it?
You're in league with the devil.
Ow! And she whacked me with her sign. Guess we'll walk over to the sheriff's office and I'll book you.
You'll touch my wife and you're dead.
I decided not to argue against the snub-nosed revolver in his hand, pointing in the general direction of my heart. I'm temporarily outgunned.
We're going to close this show right now, and you won't interfere.
I brought my billy club up from below and whacked his arm to one side as he pulled the trigger. The shot went up in the air. Then I whacked his hand and he dropped the gun. A couple more whacks put him in a real howling mood. My ma, she always said be kind to dogs, so I quit. I picked up the piece and motioned to them both. You go ahead of me. You'll have Ike Berg for your cellmate. That banker and his old lady, they just turned silent. And it was so cold, they frosted over half of Wyoming. But they walked right along ahead of me and into my sheriff digs. Rusty, he'd gone home, and DeGraff was around somewhere, maybe with his pants on. I thought of booking the two, and I didn't have any trouble thinking up a few laws that got trampled on. But then I decided I'd just let them cool off for a couple hours and let them go. So I ushered them into the jail, eased them into my last empty cell next to Artie, who was next to Iceberg, and shut the door behind them. They didn't say one word. I guess they thought I was beneath talking to. But Artie was staring, and Iceberg, he had himself a leer on his skinny puss like this was the best entertainment he'd seen. Then Delphinium stared at the slop bucket and at the males in the other cells and closed her eyes real tight. That there pails for your needs. Hubert Sanders, he was clamping his hands around the bars so tight his knuckles were white. That was fine with me. I headed out after locking the jail door tight and went back to the opera house. Sure enough, all them watching ward people had fled after I nabbed the ringleaders, and the last of the theater goers were slipping in. I followed. Ralston nodded, an eyebrow arched, but I didn't tell him nothing. The house lamps were dim, but I could see the place was only half filled. They didn't get the last night crowd they hoped for. About the time them fellers lit the foot lamps, I decided to vamoose. What I wanted was to keep an eye on Doubtful when so many were in the opera house watching the show. So I headed out.
You send Sanders home?
Nah, they'll cool their heels a while. I'll let them out when I'm good and ready.
I hope you have 9 lives.
I smiled. It sure was a nice summer's eve in Doubtful. The June light lingered, and the town seemed at peace. I decided just to patrol and steer clear of the saloons. So I headed over to the north side of town, where all the swells lived and ordinary people like me weren't ever invited, and walked through those 3 blocks of comfortable homes on Wyoming Street. Most of them picketers lived around there, and now they were back inside of the white frame houses, many of them with shiplap siding. I could look through all them big glass windows framed by curtains and see nice rooms lit by kerosene lamps, all pleasant and secure. Most of the trouble in Doubtful was south of Main Street, so I didn't get over to this area much. The town sort of faded into grassy fields with long gulches full of cottonwood trees, and after that, the foothills. All those people in their comfortable houses treated the country behind them as a sort of village green where they would go picnicking and walking. There was sort of an unwritten rule. That was for the business people in Doubtful, and ordinary folks weren't welcome there. I don't think I'd ever been back in there. What caught my eye was a mess of ravens and crows and magpies loading up some cottonwoods back in one gulch. I didn't like the looks of that.
When all them blackbirds collected, it was for a funeral. Every once in a while, something would stir them up and they would rise up in a cloud of wings and settle again. I eyed the crowd and figured someone's dead dog had been tossed back there, or something like that. I was fixing to return to Main Street and maybe join the intermission crowd at the Opera House, but my feet kept hauling me past them nice homes and out on the meadow and finally into the gulch, where I sure stirred up not just a bunch of birds, but a lot of little animals that kept busting loose when they saw me working my way up the gulch. I finally got to the heart of it and discovered a horse lying there, or what was left of it. It was mostly picked down to the bone, and there wasn't much left to feed a crowd of scavengers like that. I thought maybe I knew that horse, because I knew the color of the hide. And when I got in a little bit, I found myself staring at Critter. His throat had been slashed, and he'd been left to bleed to death. It was him, all right. His empty eye sockets were full of blackness. Critter was gone. I stared at the mess of hide and bone and gristle. It was getting dark. I backed out of there, knowing Critter hadn't been stolen from Turk's livery barn by some Ranny who wanted a horse. Critter was stolen to hurt me, as bad as a man can be hurt. It wasn't a very good feeling. I headed back into town. I'd missed the intermission at the Opera House. The final act of the final night for the Gildersleeve Company was playing in there. I walked past Turks and found some of the roustabouts from the show harnessing them wagons. That show would be off and gone within minutes of the final curtain. I found the sheriff's office real quiet. DeGraff was gone somewhere, as usual, and nothing but a smoky lamp burned, its bad wick needing a trim. I unlocked the jail door and headed through the dim light back to the cell where them Sanderses were enjoying a little visit. Iceberg stared, Artie stared, the Sanderses sat side by side on the single iron bunk staring. I unlocked that cell.
Go home. Don't ever pull a gun on a peace officer again.
They stared at me, not quite believing they were free to go. Finally, Delphinium rose, dusted off her clothing as if it was full of lice, and pulled Hubert up, and they walked out ahead of me.
Where's my revolver?
I'm gonna keep that for a day or two until you quiet down.
It's not your property.
It's my piece. I'm a peace officer. You'll get it back when it seems fitting.
I could see Iceberg smirking in there.
Kill a horse, did you?
I don't know why I said it. I just felt like saying it. Iceberg stopped smirking. I locked up the jail and escorted the banker and his wife to the door. They neither thanked me for cutting them loose, nor cursed me, nor said one word. Instead, they showed me their backs and walked stiffly into the twilight. When the show must have ended, I saw some fellers wander out of the Opera House and head for the saloons. Hardly anyone in Doubtful went straight home after one of them shows. They went to the sampling room, hoping to mix with the girls. But even as people poured out of the theater and vanished into the summer darkness, the roustabouts and teamsters were driving those wagons and coaches straight up to Ralston's place and began piling in all the theater stuff, the settings and lamps and all that. One freight wagon already had the trunks of the cast in it. They must have packed up before the show. The gals hardly got their grease paint off before they were crawling into the coaches, while Madame Gildersleeve and her fixer, Harry Frost, were huddled with Ralston. I watched that a little, knowing that they were summing up the take and who got what. But eventually, Ralston handed over some packets of cash and coin, and Frost pushed it into his black portmanteau and headed for the mud wagon that would carry the madam and some of the top people in the show. That looked like a heap of money to me, but Ralston had told me it didn't amount to a whole lot. What the businessmen in town saw was a lot of cash leaving Doubtful for good, cash that could have kept circulating right there, making all the local folks real happy. That mud wagon apparently had a lockbox in there somewhere, because I could make out Frost pushing his hand down in and clamping a padlock on it. That wouldn't stop a holdup gang for long. My ma, she always said to see guests to the door, so I wandered over there and had my say to the madam.
Awful nice of you folks to come by, and you come again now.
Next time we'll want some rooms and some box office.
I thought you filled it up pretty good.
Good. First night, maybe. Let me tell you a thing or two, Sheriff. This was the make-or-break night. We'd win or lose in Doubtful, depending on a full house. We lost. If you chased those crazy women off, maybe we'd have sold out. But you didn't.
Well, they had a right to wave their signs, long as it was peaceful, ma'am.
Sheriff, if you want Doubtful on the show circuit, you'd better welcome us real nice.
It sure was a good show.
Legs. They wanted bare legs and undies, so we gave them legs and undies.
Those are pretty gals you got, ma'am.
The prettier they are, the more impossible they are, Sheriff. There's some need a harness and a whip. If I could put a show on the road without a single broad in it, I'd do it in a trice.
All them male singers and comics and magicians and the cowboys of Wyoming don't cross your palm with silver.
You're a card, Pickens.
Mama always said I was the two of clubs. She smiled and climbed into that mud wagon, and Frost climbed in beside her. I watched him getting settled down in there while the driver climbed up on the box and got a hold of all them reins. In an amazingly short time, the show was loaded up and the girls settled into a wagon and the roustabouts and teamsters were lining out the drays and teams. And next I knew, just as a big moon tipped the horizon, that Gildersleeve Variety Company was rattling out of Doubtful and into the bright June afterglow. It somehow seemed kind of lonesome. Ralston joined me.
They'll reach the railroad tomorrow.
They're carrying some cash.
Not as much as you suppose. It cost them plenty to board the company, more to take them to the next stop.
The merchants are all whining.
After gouging the company for meals, rooms, supplies, booze, animal feed, and all the rest. And whine away, I say.
They think the company's simply walking off with cash that should be theirs.
And right now, Harry Frost is blistering Madame Gildersleeve's ear about how Doubtful euchred them out of a profit.
How do you see it?
Doubtful profited. It added to the town's business. It brought cowboys off the ranches in droves.
I think so, too. But you'll have trouble persuading Hubert Sanders of it.
He'll change his tune. Just wait until the Grand Luxembourg Follies open up.
What'll happen?
It'll draw every last male off every ranch in Puma County, and half the males in the next county's over. And they'll spend.
Well, guess that should please our barkeeps.
It'll please the barkeeps, the madams, the merchants, and the banker, if he's got eyes to see. Doubtful's going to do a land office trade.
If the show opens up, if I can keep Ike Berg locked down, maybe it'll be like you say. But they're all ganging up on me.
I'm depending on you.
Right now, I'm worried that the Gildersleeve outfit will be jumped.
Well, there's hooligans in every town on the circuit who think they'll clean out the company when it leaves. If they try to set up an ambush around here, they'll be in for a surprise. Those traveling companies expect it, and they know how to deal with it.
I thought it might be something like that.
Well, they'll keep Doc Harrison busy, and it won't be patching up the Gildersleeve company either.
Guess I'll fold.
Guess I'll lock up.
I made my way to Bell's, ready for a week of sleep. It finally got good and dark. Sometimes I thought June days never quit. I got as far as Colorado Street when a stick-up man hit me.
Hands up, Sheriff, and don't swing the billy club. I'm too far behind you.
That sounded authoritative, so I slowly raised my arms.
Hire!
You got everything last time, and the county hadn't paid me.
Hire!
Aw, hell, if you're gonna shoot, then shoot.
Pull your pockets out.
I got my hands up.
Lower them and pull your pockets. I want your jail key.
Don't have it on me. I pulled my pockets and dropped a couple of dimes. He ignored them.
Head for the jail.
It sure was turning into a long night. But I'd done as he said, and he followed behind, and we hiked back to Maine and up the stairs and in. DeGraff was still off somewhere.
No tricks, Pickens. Get the jail keys and drop them on the floor. If you pick up anything else, you're Maxwell's meat.
I forget where they are. I tried to turn my head around to get a glimpse of the holdup man. It was dark in there, with one lamp lit and its chimney smoked up. There were a couple of shotguns and a couple of rifles in the rack on the wall, none loaded. The jail keys were kept out of sight. Mine were in my desk drawer. I wondered if I could reach the sawed-off scattergun I'd been using, which was on my desk.
Don't.
I plumb forgot where them keys are. Woo! The shot lifted my hat plumb off my noggin. I just remembered. I pulled the bottom drawer and pitched the keys in his direction. He scooped them up, and now I got a glimpse.
He had a kerchief over his face and was wide and short and dark-haired. He could have been any of a dozen people I'd seen around town.
Pull your star off. You got fired and now you'll stay fired.
I got an idea where this was heading. I unpinned my badge and laid it real gentle on my desk.
Leave that billy club on your desk.
I've done that too.
Now, head out the door.
I walked out. It sure was quiet and dark and doubtful. I slid off into the shadows and waited. It didn't take long. The door opened, still in lamplight, and the holdup man and Ike Berg emerged. Ike was wearing a star, and I thought it was probably mine. From my shadowed view under a store gallery, I eyed the pair. I thought the stick-up man was the same as robbed me earlier. And when I thunk about it, maybe he was a horse thief, a horse killer, and worse, all rolled into one. I kept on watching and saw them head for the hotel and go in. It was so dark I couldn't be sure. I edged over to the hotel, trying to see into the lobby, but there wasn't anyone in there, and not one lamp was lit. I waited a while, thinking the stick-up man might come out, but he didn't. I hiked over to Rusty's. He had a little shack behind the cat houses. He opened up real fast, his six gun in his fist. He looked me over and invited me in with a nod. Then he lit a lamp.
What?
I told him, and then I told him about Critter, too.
I'm Berg's deputy now?
Looks that way.
The hell I am. I'll quit.
I'd like you to stay on, Rusty. That stick-up man's gonna wander in and you'll figure a few things out, like who he is. They haven't run me out of town yet, but that's next. They might fire you, too. Might fire all my deputies and put in their own. If they do, will you join me? We got us a crime wave, and now it's in my office. He eyed me a while and simply grinned. That's what I like about Rusty.
I got an old iron I'll lend you.
He headed into the rear room and came out with a battered gun belt with a Smith & Wesson parked in it and handed it to me. I strapped it on, and it felt real good.
It doesn't fire true, but it makes lots of noise.
They even took my billy club. And I was partial to that sawed-off scatter gun, but that's the county's.
Look, Cotton, they won't want us around. They know we'll stick together. I'm expecting I'll get my marching orders when I walk in. The rest, too. I don't know what your plans are, but I want to tell you something. Whatever they are, you deal me in. I think the others will agree.
The thing is, I don't know what's behind it. I've been a good peace officer, kept the lid on, and now this.
Yeah, it's a mystery. The supervisors, they're itching to get rid of you. Something's pushing and shoving them.
Care to guess who?
Somebody with a lot of push and shove. Oh.
I got out of there. I hiked across the south side, past the saloons and cat houses and all that stuff, which were still lit up. It felt strange not having that badge on my chest. I was just another citizen now, without the power to do much. I got to my room, glad to throw myself into my bunk, barely taking time to unbuckle Rusty's hardware. I had intended to lie there and speculate a little, try to figure out what tomorrow would bring. But all I managed to do was drop into a deep sleep, and I didn't break out of that until the next dawn, when sunlight tickled me awake. It occurred to me that I had to make a living. On Monday, I'd owe Belle for another week, and somehow I would need to pump some chow into me. I didn't even have a horse to take me out to the ranches where I might hire on to do a little cowboying. I rifled the stocking where I kept a few singles, stuffed them into my pocket, and headed out the door. Belle waylaid me before I could escape.
It's all over town. You're out, Skinny's in.
It's a mystery.
No, it ain't. The banker's wife, she's been pushing to shut down all the saloons and the pleasure places and clean up Doubtful, and you're the obstacle. She wants Doubtful to turn Baptist or whatever she is and get dipped in the river.
You think so? How do you know that?
Sometimes, Cotton Pickens, you don't know where your feet are.
That's what my ma always said.
Maybe I should go get myself baptized before they shut me down. Once you've been pushed underwater, wearing all white, they leave you alone.
I got out of there. The beanery was a likely place for some cheap chow, so I barged in and discovered my whole crew there.
We knew you'd show up.
I stared at them. No badges. They waved me to their table.
We're out. They collected our badges. We don't know who Iceberg's naming as his deputies, but it ain't us.
Where were you last night?
Patrolling the Tenderloin.
Yeah, every room.
I keep them all from overcharging customers. Personal inspection.
Billy Bono, the new proprietor of what was formerly known as Toadie's Beanery, had expanded the menu, which used to be all beans all day. He set a bowl of oatmeal before me, which was fine. I could breakfast for one thin dime.
How come they fired him?
Because of the crime wave.
Word sure got around.
Rusty waited for Bono to vamoose.
What's gonna happen next?
Me? I'm gonna find out who killed Critter, who robbed me, who stole my gun belt, and why. What are you fellas gonna do?
Help you. Until we run out of money, which won't be long. But we'll help out. We've been making a few plans of our own. Something's gone real wrong and doubtful. And there ain't nobody but ourselves to put it straight.
Well, that would be mighty fine. Mighty fine. We got a friend, Cyrus Ralston. It's also a place for us to meet on the quiet. Cy's plenty worried that this is all directed at him. That the goal of half the merchants in town is to shut down his opera house and keep those variety companies from playing here. And we're the only help he's got. Especially now with the county supervisors, the sheriff, the banker, and all the town's merchants lined up against him. There's something we can do, starting today when the next company rolls in. We can protect it and keep Ralston's doors open.
What for?
It's a girly show.